Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
We have an asset class which is $2.5 trillion. I think it's going to be 5 to 10 times bigger in the next 2 to 5 years. And the opportunity is now.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, V-E-S-T-R.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.
I'm here with George Kosikis, and we're going to talk about cryptocurrencies and the validated technologies and also his experience as an investor. Now, let's just jump right in. What is blockchain? Everybody throws that word around, but is it a chain of blocks or what is it?
Great question. Glad to be here, Stefan. So the blockchain is basically a public database. It's a distributed database that has a very specific characteristic. You can only write to it once. Once something is written in that ledger, that database, it cannot be changed. And that record of database records or transactions is shared across multiple computers. So no single node in that network of computers can change that database. This is it. It's pretty simple, actually.
So once a transaction has been recorded, or it cannot be changed again. So it's impossible to manipulate the records.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. This is what's known as the immutable property of these databases. This makes them specifically very well suited to transactional database, especially when there is a financial records written on them. And this is why they form the basis of cryptocurrencies. They're essentially a way of storing transactional data in a trustless way globally, right? So that people can transact with each other without a central counterparty like a clearinghouse or a bank between.
Now, you mentioned it's obviously for currencies, it's good for currencies. Now, there's multiple ones out. Let's pick two of the, probably the biggest one, Ethereum and Bitcoin. And are they both using that technology? And if yes, what's the difference between them?
Yes. So fundamentally, yes, they're both using that distributed ledger technology. Bitcoin is the granddaddy. It's the cryptocurrency which is dominating the space. It's seen as a digital gold by a number of participants. And it's the largest capitalization cryptocurrency right now. Ethereum is the number two market capitalization cryptocurrency with the extra added feature of programmability. So the big difference between Bitcoin and Ethereum is this programmability. The Ethereum ecosystem, which has a couple of 100,000 developers on its network, is able to essentially not only store transactions, but actually execute contracts and code on this network in a distributed manner. These contracts are called smart contracts. They are a way of programming if-then-else statements to make it very simple, obviously much more complex, but in a way which is visible to everybody and where these contracts are executed on a global computer, the Ethereum computer, right? There is a very big difference between these two, which is the following. I consider Bitcoin to be fully autonomous. I would say Ethereum is almost fully autonomous because it has the biggest network effect in terms of developers and spread. Still, you know, there is a core group of people that are designing to some extent together with the community its future, right? So these two would be the most autonomous, with Bitcoin being the most autonomous and the one which actually is running on a set of economic incentives that requires almost no human interaction. Okay, now there are currently 7,000 cryptocurrencies. You know, we started with something like 1,000 maybe a few years ago. We're up 7,000, and I'm not counting what else could be represented on the ledger, like NFTs or tokenized securities and so on and so on. The way to think about all these cryptos is essentially as investments into technology companies. You have to think about these cryptocurrency coins, some of them obviously having other functionalities within their ecosystem, but really at the end of the day being very early stage liquid technology investments. They don't have the lockups that potentially would have for an investor to be in a 10-year VC fund, and hence they face the kind of volatility which is visible, unlike a private equity or VC investment. But at the end of the day, they are technology investments themselves.
Wow, okay. I need to ask a few clarifications of stuff you used in. So you said Ethereum is like a setup or recorded in a global computer. Do you have to imagine somewhere a cloud setup like Amazon Cloud or Google Cloud, and somewhere there's a place where electricity is cheap, where there sits a big global computer for Ethereum? Or is what do I, how do I better understand that?
No, the computers, the nodes that participate in these networks are globally distributed, and they are as small as a, you know, an enthusiast's PC running on the basement, you know, to, you know, huge server farms in low electricity places with renewable energy. So they go from anywhere from like individuals to actual corporates that actually participate, and they earn the rewards by essentially ensuring the security of the network. And what is the security of the network? It's making sure that the transactions which are recorded are correct and they cannot be changed. There are economic incentives for all these players to actually do that.
And you mentioned also that you should see it as an investment into technology and companies, early stage technology companies, but also Bitcoin as gold. So, you know, you're saying, are cryptocurrency a good investment? And if yes, you know, how big of a portion would you recommend somebody they should, their portfolio should be in cryptocurrencies?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's two answers to that. One is in isolation, you know, are these, you know, investments any good, right? And there is an answer relative to what is happening in the world in other assets as well, obviously, right? And, you know, we have to think, I think, on a relative basis. In isolation, Bitcoin has a very interesting characteristic. It has a limited supply of coins, 21 million coins. There'll never be any more than that. It's one of the very few verifiably disinflationary assets in the world right now. So that's why it's called digital gold, right? Other coins, there are teams which control potentially issuance of more coins. There could be inflationary episodes. Every coin has its own little monetary central bank, which could be a large community, which is well managed to a single individual. So again, you know, you cannot really compare. But if you were to take a look at cryptocurrencies in context to what is happening in financial markets right now, I think they are a good investment, not only because of the potential inflationary questions that all of us have. Actually, it's not a question. It's a question of magnitude right now and duration of inflationary shocks, right? When you have provably disinflationary assets like Bitcoin, I think they really have a value in every investor's portfolio, right? In the same way gold does, actually. Right, I'm not, you know, I'm not a purist. I'm not a mercantilist. Do any of the other cryptocurrencies make sense? Well, they do make sense if that portfolio has a certain risk appetite on horizon for excess returns. Right, and again, it goes back to, you know, how do you look at your risk? How do you manage your portfolio? It's very difficult to say if a certain coin is a good investment. It depends on, you know, what is your investment horizon and, you know, what is the risk appetite you might have.
I mean, how do you look at the risk of a cryptocurrency? How do you measure it? You know, historically, you did volatility, Sharpe ratios, you know, all kinds of things. When you, as an investor yourself, look into a new cryptocurrency, how do you do your due diligence on it?
Well, I started trading quite actively crypto around about 2016 or so, right? So I've been through one big cycle, the 2017-18, which was very interesting, very volatile, huge drawdowns, huge moves. And I think what kept me through that cycle is an understanding of risk as something more as a volatility measure or a drawdown measure, right? You have to think of risk in multiple dimensions. A, the most important one, what is my horizon? Is my investment thesis a three-month thesis, a one-month thesis? Is it like a two-day thesis? Am I a day trader? Am I somebody who is thinking of this is going to be a generational opportunity over 5 years? And I think that changes how you allocate risk. After that, you have to think, if this is not a fully autonomous currency like Bitcoin, right, where there is a set of economic incentives which are clear to everybody, is the team that is backing a certain project a credible team? You know, because at the end of the day, you are actually investing in people, right, to some extent. Are they able to create the network effects that will actually make this coin viable without them in the future, right? Are they thinking long-term as well? So that's more of a human capital type of question of risk, which cannot be quantified, but one has to ask. Then there is a third dimension, regulatory, which we can discuss in multiple dimensions, but am I facing a gap risk with potential projects that have a tremendous amount of regulatory headwinds in the future, right? Because they might be stepping on various toes and, you know, having dimensions that make them very interesting to regulators. And funnily enough, the most successful ones are the ones that face these headwinds, right? So, you know, which, you know, I think is something that generally happens also in other markets as well. Obviously, you know, Sortino is more important to me than Chart, right? I don't care if I'm making a lot of money suddenly. I don't want to lose a lot of money suddenly. I also care about the predictability of the distribution. Okay, I don't know how to say this in more simple terms, but the more predictable the statistical properties of the time series are, I'm not saying I need to forecast it, you know, to 90% accuracy, but if I understand the statistical properties of what I'm trading, and hence this predictability means that this time series has slightly lower entropy, it means that it's a better investment for me, right? That's how I look at risk myself. And then, again, probably the last thing, but very, very important, liquidity. So when I started trading, things were not very liquid, right? So I had to think, okay, do I hold the position that if I change my mind for whatever reason, I can actually get out? And this is really important, right? Because I did make mistakes at the beginning. I did hold coins where I was like 50% of the trading volume. And, you know, it's kind of things that I shouldn't have been doing.
Yeah.
Which, you know, got carried away, let's put it this way, given that I would never have done it in my trading, you know, in traditional markets, right? I'd never hold anything 50% of the volume, right? So I made these mistakes, and obviously understanding how the liquidity is and if there's gaps of liquidity related to potential liquidations from levered players is really important. It's getting less important as the market matures, right? So for the top 10, 20 coins, even if, you know, there's enough liquidity for pretty much every player out there, unless you're trading billions. But the moment you step out of this top 10, 20, you know, if you don't have a handle of where liquidity is in the market, you could find yourself in a difficult position.
Now, you just pointed all potential risks out and how you look at it. Maybe, you know, why actually should people care about crypto? You clearly care about it and you have immersed yourself for many years now in it. But now people who just more and more hear about it, why should they actually care about it?
I think it's the first time that we have a significant dual revolution. We have a technological revolution and a financial / monetary revolution, right? So unlike the previous big technological innovation wave, which was around the internet and mobile possibly in the last 20 years, which allowed e-commerce to flourish and a few other things like social networks and so on, here we have also a distributed autonomous monetary system, which I think is the first time in history that this has ever happened, essentially, right? And the amount of innovation that is actually happening right now in the crypto space is mind-boggling. So if you think and you feel like I do that this is the future of capital markets and finance, you cannot afford to be out of this. It's like, you know, it's like saying I would believe that e-commerce is going to be a big part of the economy in the future, and I have the opportunity to buy Amazon stock 20 years ago, and I wouldn't do that, right? Or, you know, it's a similar kind of thing. Now, if your thesis is that, you know, I don't believe this, we're still going to trade everything, T+2, and there's going to be all the centralized counterparties, and, you know, regulation is going to kill everything. Yes, I understand that. But because there is a large group of people holding this kind of doubt is why the opportunity is still there. Obviously, in the next 2 years, when that disappears, and I give it 2 years max,
that
opportunity will disappear as well. We have an asset class which is $2.5 trillion. I think it's going to be 5 to 10 times bigger in the next 2 to 5 years. And the opportunity is now.
Now, obviously, you started looking into cryptos. You said you started actively trading since 2016. But you have more than 20 years experience in the investment business. And I always like to ask people a little bit, sort of, you know, why do you do what you do? What drives you? You know, what gets you up in the morning to actually look at another potential investment?
Well, you know, in probably what would be described as a psychological problem I might have, I like the immediate feedback of the markets. So what I mean by that, you know, I focus on something and I kind of think about it and take a decision, and I put some money behind it, right? You know, and you know, I could be proven wrong instantly, or you know, slowly, or right. But I do like that feedback, one way or the other, right? And yeah. Because I'm a person that I am kind of happy to change my mind as the data changes, it allows me to basically be in an ecosystem where I have this very fast feedback loop about what I think and adjust, you know, my positions, right? In every other endeavor, which is longer term, and you know, I'm a huge fan of building technology. The cycles are much bigger. You take a decision to build something or do something, and the outcome, the feedback will come in months, right? You
or
take a decision to trade
something,
or years, exactly. you decide to trade something one way or the other, you're going to learn pretty fast, you know, how good of a decision that was. And so one is the feedback. The second one is I do like a lot the multidisciplinary nature of investing, you know, trying to kind of fuse a lot of data sources, understand, you know, behavioral, mathematical, statistical aspects, and put everything together to actually trade. And you know, it's one of these things that is really exciting. And if you think about trading from anywhere from day trading something and flipping futures and then, you know, scalping futures, you know, for cents,
yeah,
to making huge macro trades, you know, they all share that common characteristic. You know, there's always a few things that need to get fused for somebody to take that decision. Even if it's an algo, it has to be trained on data streams, which are obviously more than just, you know, a flip of a coin, right?
Now, obviously, how do you then, when you go about this, it sometimes can be a very lonely business in a sense. You have to go do this by yourself with your conviction and might adapt it to the feedback. But sort of how do you have you structured your process and or surroundings to actually be efficient in this?
Good question. So in terms of surroundings, I try to make sure that I always set aside some times where I don't have calls. I try not to answer emails. I try to put my phone away. I've actually tried a period where for some times I used an old Nokia with no messages.
Excellent.
Exactly, which didn't work. I had to go back to the smartphone. But anyway, but essentially having periods of reduced noise is really important, right? You know, deep work is extremely important in this business. And then that coupled with deep collaboration. So you need to do the deep work yourself, but you also need to have people that actually, you know, they're going to push back what you're saying. They're going to either, you know, help you take a step forward or tell you where you're going wrong. So these two are very synergistic, you know, deep work and deep collaboration.
Thank you. And a question I always like to ask everybody right at the end is sort of what are they up to? One is enough. Three is excellent. Favorite finance movies and also why?
So I've got a couple of serious movies, which I love. There are Margin Call and The Big Short. Margin Call, I think, was as a movie, cinematically spectacular. You know, the actors were fantastic, and it captured really the mood of what was happening. Big Short is very interesting as well. I don't think it captures that well that period, because I think it's a little bit more spread out in terms of thematics, but it's really well done. And I have a couple of niche movies that I loved. One is a comedy. It's a very old movie called Trading Places with Eddie Murphy, right? Where he, you know, he gets recruited by a couple of older dudes who set up a bet whether, you know, he can actually be trained to trade or not, right? The way floor markets work are, you know, pretty much exactly how they were portrayed to a large extent. And another one, which is very niche, I don't know if anybody has seen that, you should definitely check it out. It's Pi. So Pi as in the 3.14 kind of number, right? Which is about a statistician, mathematician, genius who is going nuts trying to figure out if there's a pattern to the universe and these universal patterns can translate to predicting the market, right? But it was, you know, it kind of stuck with me, essentially. That
excellent. I'm going to have to watch this. This is the one movie I've not seen, and Trading Places I know, but it shows my age, I guess. George, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Stefan. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Nalu FM Finance Podcast. Insight into the financial markets.
This podcast is powered by Vesta, the engine behind active management. Vesta is a Switzerland-based fintech startup that provides software for issuers of actively managed certificates to automate their value chain fully. Visit Vesta, V-E-S-T-R.com, to schedule a meeting with an expert and to learn more about Vesta.